So today I'm very excited to talk to you about a project we did a couple years ago at Baseball Reference. The Negro Leagues are major leagues, and we're going to share 2 years post-launch about that project. So back in June of 2021, Baseball Reference dramatically expanded coverage of the Negro Leagues and historical black major league players through a partnership with Agate Type Research and with the Seamhead's Negro Leagues database. Today I'm going to talk about the launch, what went into the launch, how we did it, the impact of that launch, what we've done since the launch, what's coming up next, and how the research community can help with that. So first, a little bit about Baseball Reference. The site was built... What's that? Oh, get closer to the mic. All right. Perfect. How's that? All right. Thank you. I like that feedback. Appreciate that. So Baseball Reference was built by Sean Foreman and launched in April of 2000. It's run today by Sports Reference LLC, which was founded in 2007. Sean is still the president of the company. He's here today. We're based in Philadelphia, but we're a remote-first company and have 32 full-time employees now spread out throughout the United States and even a couple outside of the United States. It's one of many reference sites that we have. We have Basketball Reference, Pro Football, Hockey Reference, FB Ref for World Soccer. We have college basketball, college football, and thousands of hobbyists and researchers use our powerful research tools to dive deeper into the reference databases. We call that StatHead. So if you're a StatHead subscriber, really appreciate you for that. We serve about 1.5 billion pages per year, which is a number I'm still getting used to. And our core purpose is that we democratize sports data. So about the data set, this is Gary Ashwill here on the right of the Seamhead's Negro Leagues database. The history of the data set is that back in 2000, Gary started collecting Negro Leagues box scores. And in 2004, he was added to the Negro Leagues researchers and authors group, which ahead of the 2006 Hall of Fame induction, compiled a lot of data to conduct that induction, and 17 new Negro League candidates ended up getting into the Hall of Fame that year. After the induction, Gary continued compiling stats and began blogging over at Agate Type. His blog is wonderful. If you're into Negro Leagues research at all, it's fantastic. In 2011, he was approached by the Seamhead's Negro Leagues, the Seamhead's group, Mike Lynch and Kevin Johnson specifically, to put the data he had been compiling on Seamheads.com, and that is how the Negro Leagues, the Seamhead's Negro Leagues database was born. And the next year, they joined forces with Larry Lester, Dick Clark, and Wayne Stivers to work from the decades of box scores that they had been collecting as well. And over the last few years, they've been adding to it, updating, completing, like fielding data and things like that to fill out the record even more up until 2021, when the data finally appeared on Baseball Reference. What's unique about the Seamhead's data set is that with the exception of a few Mexican League seasons, it's all built from the box score up. So everything has, you know, every hit has a corresponding hit allowed. Every plate appearance has a corresponding plate appearance on the other side. So that makes it a little bit more unique than what you see from some end of season Negro League compilations of stats, which you don't really know which games were included in those. You don't know like if there was any fact-checking done. So this is all done from the ground up. And the database includes the major Negro Leagues from 1920 to 48, the independent teams within that window, the pre-1920 black baseball leagues, some seasons from the Cuban League, some seasons from the Mexican League, but also Negro League series against major leaguers, which in this sense is AL and NL, the Cuban Leagues, high minors, and the semi-pros. So what's the TLDR? What exactly changed on the website? Previously, on the left side, we had 7 major leagues listed on the site. And that includes the National Association, which isn't technically a major league in the eyes of Major League Baseball, but we list it as such. And then after this launch, there were now 14. So we added these 7 major Negro Leagues to the site to be presented just as they would, just as the American League or National League would. And what does that look like? Here is a player page. This is Bullet Rogan, one of my personal favorites. His player page looks exactly how you would see a player from the AL or NL. So his biographical information is there. His photo is there. His stats are there. League leaders are in bold. Career totals are there. His Hall of Fame designation, his ERA title, his World Series title. It's all there. We're trying to be as consistent as possible across all of the major leagues we cover. This is a graphic I like to show. I never really know how to introduce this graphic. It just it shows the magnitude to me. So bear with me here. So the major Negro leagues were conducted from 1920 to 48. That's a 29-year span. We'll call that the major Negro leagues generation. The next generation is what I'm calling the 29 years after that. So that's 1949 to 77. And what this list here, this list is from Stathead. It's the top 40 position players from that first generation after integration. And then these are the players that would not have been allowed to play in the major leagues in the previous generation. It's more than half of them. So this is like very different and was very profound the first time I did this search. And I've been showing it to whoever will look at it at this point. A timeline of the project. So back in August of 2020, this article was even mentioned last night at the get-together last night. Ben Lindbergh wrote a piece at The Ringer basically asking, why are the Negro Leagues not major leagues at this point? And that's what really got the wheels turning, not just in Sports Reference, but I think industry-wide, that this was something that the time had come. The Seamhead's Negro Leagues database was strong enough that the data was there, and this was something that was technically feasible. I joined Sports Reference in November 2020. I was very happy when I joined to see that negotiations with the Seamheads group were already underway when I joined. The next month, database work actually began ahead of having a signed contract, and we were just very excited to work on it. In December of 2020, something also happened. Major League Baseball made their announcement where seven Negro Leagues were being reclassified as Major Leagues. And that, of course, was great news. It really showed that we were on the right path with the work that we were doing already. In fact, in February of 2021, the Sabre Negro Leagues Task Force, which Sean was a part of, also announced that the same seven Negro Leagues would be considered in Sabre publications as Major Leagues as well. But the Sabre announcement left the door open for future consideration of things like pre-1920 black baseball, post-1948 leagues, or even some of the independent leagues within that window. So in April 2021, we originally planned to launch, but we ended up postponing that because we wanted to make sure that we got it right in the presentation. So our work has traditionally been very stat-focused, but for this one, we needed to go beyond the stats to really explain the context of what was happening here. So the Negro Leagues were major leagues, but they weren't the same as the AL and NL, and we wanted to make sure that we reflected that on the website. Rather than squeezing the Negro Leagues into a AL and NL sized hole, we needed to both point out the differences and celebrate them. You know, some of those differences are that the league schedules were, you know, they looked shorter, but that was because there was a ton of barnstorming games happening in between. They needed to make money from those barnstorming games to continue playing their schedule and go to the next town. Those barnstorming games are not included in the data set. Those were against a wide variety of competition. That's anything from major league all the way down to town league teams. And that's why you see on Josh Gibson's Hall of Fame plaque, he's listed as having nearly 800 home runs, but on our page, he has 166. That's because he hit hundreds in barnstorming games. He hit them outside of the country in Puerto Rico and Mexico and Cuba. He hit them in independent leagues for independent teams against some of the other major league teams. So that's where that disparity comes from. You know, related to that, some of the top players in the league found it more lucrative and just, you know, better for their own well-being to play in other countries, such as, you know, in the Caribbean, in Mexico, or in Venezuela. And that was because, you know, some players decided that, you know, they left the Negro Leagues and they just loved Mexico because they were treated like kings. Wild Bill Wright is a great example of that. And some top clubs also decided it was more lucrative or beneficial to them to play outside of the league structure and just play a fully barnstorming or an independent schedule. Something that I learned that we don't see in the AL and NL is that schedules were not balanced. The top teams played against the other top teams repeatedly because that's where the big gate money came from. So, you know, there's a wild disparity in the strength of schedule for some of these players. I was just talking to Kevin Johnson last night, and he's like, so Josh Gibson had these out of this world numbers, but he played in these cavernous stadiums and he constantly played against the best teams. So he's even better than his record shows. And because of all of this, season lengths varied by team, even within the same league. This is the 1935 Negro National League here. The Pittsburgh Crawfords were in first place. They had 52 games. The New York Cubans were in second. They had 42 games. And third place is the Philadelphia Stars with 60. So like the game totals are all over the place because they weren't consistent schedules between the teams. Let's see. Sorry. I have paper notes because I'm not a millennial. Sorry. So we needed to unravel 20 years of assumptions we made in our code of what a major league was, because now these were all very different factors to put into consideration. And to do this in this launch, we needed help. So we commissioned articles to be included in the launch that would help describe these differences in detail. And some of the people who wrote them are in this room today. So Gary Ashwill, Adrian Burgos, Sean Gibson, the great-grandson of Josh Gibson, Gary Gillette, Leslie Heafy, Adam Jones, formerly of the Baltimore Orioles, Bob Kendrick, Larry Lester, Michael E. Lomax, Todd Peterson, Joe Posnanski, Vanessa Ivy Rose, who's the granddaughter of Turkey Stearns, and Ryan Swanson. They wrote articles that we could include in our launch that would help explain this data in more detail. And now they're compiled in a book that I have a few copies of here. So if you're a first-time Sabre attendee or a under 18 Sabre attendee, please come see me. I have a few to give away. In addition to commissioning those articles, we brought in some outside help as well. Dr. Curtis Harris, we brought on as a consultant, and he also hosted a podcast that we ran called The Negro Leagues or Major Leagues that talked to many of these authors from the previous slide and shared these in-depth stories about how the Negro Leagues operated, how they came about, and you know what ended up being their downfall. And I just listened to this series again last month, and it's just so good. It's the perfect introduction to the Negro Leagues, if you ask me. I think it's amazing. Caitlin Moyer was brought on to handle PR because we didn't have a marketing department yet. We do now, but we were much smaller at the time of this. And then we had dozens of reviewers, many of them in this room, who took a look at the site ahead of time. We put up a testing server and gave a bunch of people access to it, and we were kind of inundated with great feedback from so many people. I gotta tell you, it's really wild, like checking your email one day and there's like an email from Andrew McCutcheon telling you about the presentation of the data on the site. That was really cool. But you know, we got a lot of great feedback from people like Dr. Ray Doswell, for example. He was the curator at the Negro Leagues Museum at the time. And he's like, Adam, these are the questions that we're getting constantly. So can you help, you know, answer these questions so people aren't calling us all the time? Like, he was finding out, either being asked, is Hank Aaron going to be the new home run king now? Is he going to pass Barry Bonds? So, you know, we had to be clear, like, exactly what years were covered and what wasn't. We also worked with Jay Jaffe to update the JAWS system, because obviously the Negro Leagues had shorter schedules. So how do we properly present that data? And we ended up introducing WAR per 162. Per 162 games, that is. So you can see WAR on like a rate basis. So that's something that was a new feature that was added because of this project, but is now found on every player page. So you can look at Barry Bonds' WAR per 162 right along with Josh Gibson's. And we got a lot of feedback on, you know, terminology to use. Like, when should we say major leagues? When should we say MLB? And, you know, technically, MLB as an entity existed from 2000 on, because before that the leagues operated independently. So that was the designation that we made on the site. When it's 2000 beyond, we'll say MLB. Otherwise, we're going to say Major Leagues, not Major League Baseball, the entity. You know, and we also wanted to be sure that in our messaging around the launch, that we weren't bestowing any new status on the leagues, the teams, and the players. And we wanted to really stress that they were always major league players. They knew that they were. And we are really just correcting an error in the presentation of our site. We weren't reflecting as such, and we wanted to make sure that we were doing that going forward. So in June 2021 came the launch. 2,430 players played in the major Negro leagues from 1920 to 48. 47 of them were previously recognized on our site as major league players for playing in the AL and NL. So that meant on that day there were 2,383 players who were finally being considered major league players on our site. And you can see here on the homepage we have that tally of how many major league players we have. It has recently passed 23,000 actually. But, you know, I just took this screenshot the other day, and on the lower left, we have Roy Campanella, who is one of those 47 who also played in the AL and NL. But right next to him is Rats Henderson, who we did not have before. And in the upper right, we have the great Cuban pitcher Juan Padron. So they are all reflected the same way on our site. Those 47 players that were previously in the AL and NL had updates to their major league records. Manny Munoso and Jim Gilliam surpassed 2,000 career hits. Roy Campanella passed 250 home runs. Monte Irvin's career batting average is now above 300. And you can see here on Minnie's player page his updated stats. And he ended up getting into the Hall of Fame after he surpassed 2,000 hits. So maybe that helped a little bit. I don't know. It was well-deserved, I will say that. Leaderboards look very different now. On the left here, we have the all-time batting average leaderboard. And there's Oscar Charleston, number two. Judd Wilson at number five, Turkey Stearns at number seven. On the right is the on-base plus slugging, OPS leaderboards. Oscar is there again at number four behind Ruth, Williams, and Gehrig. And then at number seven and eight, we have Turkey Stearns and Mule Suttles. On the left here is OPS plus, Oscar Charleston again, third place. We got Turkey Stearns at six, and Mule Suttles is tied with Mickey Mantle for 10th. And then on the pitching side, ERA plus, we have Willie Foster, second all-time at 164. Bullet Rogan right behind him at 161. Doesn't even include his hitting. Satchel Paige tied for seventh at 150. And Raymond Brown in the top 10 there at 147. So where's Josh Gibson? That's a great question. And that's something that we need to think about going forward as well. Our rate stat leaderboard requires 3,000 plate appearances. You could definitely argue that that's something that we should reconsider now that there are seasons of different lengths in our database. We haven't done that yet. This is an example of the ongoing work that's going to be done. So Gibson currently sits at 2,526 plate appearances. However, from 1930 to 32, he played for the Grays and Crawfords on those aforementioned totally independent teams. They didn't play within a league structure. And he had another 585 plate appearances in those seasons. So that would push him over 3,000 if those were to be considered major, but at this time they are not. And how good were those teams? Oh, thank you for asking. So I want to share some of the players on those teams. So the 1930 Homestead Grays had Hall of Famer Gibson, but they also had Hall of Famer Oscar Charleston, Judy Johnson, Smokey Joe Williams. And they also had Vic Harris and George Scales, two people who any Negro League researcher will tell you should absolutely be Hall of Famers. In 1931, Hall of Famers Gibson, Charleston, Williams, also Judd Wilson and Willie Foster, Satchel Paige, but just for one game. And also they had Harris, Scales, and then double duty Radcliffe. And the 32 Crawfords, this is quite the roster here. I was kind of blown away by this. Gibson, Charleston, a full season of Paige this time, Judd Wilson, Judy Johnson, a couple games of Cool Papa Bell, double duty Radcliffe, Rap Dixon, another who should probably be considered for the Hall of Fame. You could say the same thing about William Bell, Ted Paige, Sam Streeter, Walter Kennedy, Frank Duncan, Bill Perkins. This team was stacked. So right now they're not considered major league teams, but that could be something that is addressed in the future as well. If Josh Gibson, based on his current numbers, was on these leaderboards, he would be first all-time in batting average, first all-time in slugging, first all-time in on-base plus slugging, OPS plus, and then fourth in OBP. So what's not included in the launch? Game logs are not included in the launch yet. That data is in the process of being cleaned up, and that is something that we're very excited to bring to the site in the future. I can't wait to do things like run stat head searches on Negro National League games to find, you know, certain, you know, four-hit games or, you know, complete game shutouts against the Monarchs and things like that. It's all done from the box score up, so this will be possible in the future. Park factors are something we haven't added yet. I talked to Kevin Johnson quite a bit about the park factoring last night. He also has a strength of schedule adjustment, which is not something that we've ever had to do for the AL and NL because you don't need to have an unbalanced schedule there. So, you know, these are all things that we have to consider in, like, you know, adjusting for OPS plus and ERA plus and things like that. And then, of course, stats from the missing games are not included in this as well. But hopefully that list will grow shorter over time. So what's the state of the data? you know, a lot of people I've heard shrug and say, you know, it's only 60 games in a season or whatever, that's not complete data. Well, in many cases, it's more complete than you think, because people see a shorter schedule and they automatically assume it should be 162. But, you know, like we said earlier, there's all those barnstorming games in there. In terms of league games, it was about 75% coverage in the database, and that's around 100% in the 1920s when coverage was really at its peak. In the 1930s, due to things like the Depression affecting coverage, that dips to about 75%. And then in the 1940s, that does dip to about 50% because of the war, the upcoming integration of the game, and other factors as well. There are box scores out there to be found, I'm sure, though. I want to talk about a couple of interesting seasons and how the number of games and plate appearances and innings impact all-time leaderboards. On the right here, we have the single season batting average leaderboard, and the record holder is now Juan Tetelo Vargas, the great Dominican player who played a few seasons in the Negro Leagues, in addition to many more that I'll get to in a little bit. So Vargas' season, he hit 471, but it was in 30 games with just 121 at-bats. So how does a player with just 121 at-bats become the all-time batting average record holder? Great question, I'm going to tell you. So those 1943 Cubans that he played on, they only played 34 league games. Now, compare that to the Homestead Grays in the very same league, played 68. So this is another example where the schedules varied greatly. This isn't because those games haven't been found. They only played that many. And the data set also includes some games in interleague play and some against those top independent teams. So for the 1943 Cubans, we have a total of 38 box scores. The leaderboard requirement at the time in the ALNL, which we adopted for the Negro Leagues, is 2.6 at-bats per team game. So that means to qualify for the batting average leader, title, and therefore the all-time leaderboard, is 99 at-bats, because 38 times 2.6 is 98.99, and Tetelo Vargas does clear that bar. So that's why he has the single-season batting average record. I don't want you to think that Tetelo Vargas was just a player that just kind of fluked into this. You can see on this record here, he has another season at 379, another at 349. The others aren't as high, but that's because they have smaller samples. If you want a larger sample, in a separate project, I've done a little research on Tetelo Vargas. He played 33 seasons in 6 different countries. I've found records of about 5,000 at-bats for them, and most of these at-bats are in his age 30-plus season. He won a batting title at age 47, won a Gold Glove at 47, great player. But overall, in those games, he hit 323. So this isn't a player that just kind of fluked into this. This is an all-time great that probably needs to be more recognized. No disrespect meant, but on the other side of things, we have Robert Keys. And this is a little bit different situation that I'm going to talk through. Currently, he is the single-season ERA record holder. And he is that record holder despite a 0.64 ERA in only 3 games and 28 innings pitched. All right, Adam, how does that happen? How does a 28-inning pitch season become the all-time record holder? Well, the 1944 Memphis Red Sox, they actually played 114 league games. That's a lot of games. However, the 1940s Memphis Red Sox are notorious for missing box scores, and there's only 27. So the leaderboard requirement then and now is 1 inning pitched per team game. So what do you use for the team games? If you use the 114, then the Memphis Red Sox basically don't exist because we don't have enough box scores to even get that data. So you have to use that 27. And you see that Robert Keys had 28 innings pitched. So that's how in 3 games he ends up leading the league and therefore setting this record in ERA. Is this ideal? Absolutely not. In a perfect world, we would have all 114 league games for the Memphis Red Sox, and we would have a greater picture of the type of pitcher Robert Keys was. But we don't have that right now. You know, in fact, when we launched for the first time, the record holder was Eugene Bremmer. And then in the 2023 update, he had a box score added, and sad to say that box score didn't go too well for Eugene Bremmer, and he is no longer the record holder. So, you know, as more box scores come in for the Memphis Red Sox, we may find that Robert Keys suffers a similar fate. And this isn't the only case of this. History is messy. You know, the previous single-season ERA record holder was Tim Keefe in 1880, who had a 0.86 ERA in just 12 games. And, you know, that was 27 runs, and only 10 of them were earned. nobody really cared about that when that happened. So, you know, it's just one of those messy things. K per nine record is a huge mess thanks to the pandemic shortened 2020 season. Shane Bieber, first all time despite just 77 innings. In fact, 2020 appears seven times in that top 25. So, you know, the thing about the history being messy is, you know, the Negro Leagues have not had the same investment that the previously recognized major leagues have had. You know, we've had so many researchers digging into the AL and NL records and even the American Association and National Association and things like that. And while there are many dedicated Negro Leagues researchers, there has not been anything nearly on the same level of investment from a time and finances perspective. And given more time and more finances, you know, the gaps can close. They won't completely close because, unfortunately, due to the systemic racism of the time, there are a lot of, you know, and the coverage issues that went along with that, there are a lot of box scores that are just going to be lost to time. Like, we will never find all 114 games from that season, but there are more out there. We've made a couple of big annual updates since the launch, and both of them have had a lot of biographical information and a lot of new box scores that had been found. Like, a year after our launch, we had another edition that had 119 new plate appearances for Willard Brown, 114 for Buck O'Neill, and 69 new plate appearances for Hilton Smith, so making incremental improvements each year. The March 2023 update also had a lot more box scores. One thing that was really interesting is there was a lot of movement in batting titles based on the games that were found. Like you can see here, Roy Campanella on his page now has a batting title for the first time that he didn't have before. And again, like the Robert Keyes situation, that's something that can change over time. Like Lyman Bostock, father of the Twins, Lyman Bostock, in 1944, in the additional box scores that were found, he went 14 for 18, which rose his average to the point of leading the league. So in next year's update, that could change again, but we can only do the best with the data that we have at the time. The player that I always look to first when looking at new data coming in and to explain the evolution of the data to people is Neil Robinson, also of the Memphis Red Sox. 301 hitter in the data that we have, 142 OPS plus. He had patience and power. He was a nine-time All-Star, and that's in eight seasons. That doesn't happen very much. The list here on the left is players with eight All-Star seasons who are not in the Hall of Fame, sorted by OPS plus. And it's Neil Robinson and a whole bunch of PED guys. So I've started wondering, like, is Neil Robinson like an unknown Hall of Famer that we're missing because we don't have enough data? So every time new data comes in, he's like the first player that I check. When we made our initial launch, we had 15 seasons of Neil Robinson and a 133 OPS plus and a 297 average. But when we made our second update, the Seamheads team discovered, oh, those first three seasons are not Neil Robinson. They were actually a different player, Johnny Robinson. So therefore, he lost 243 of his plate appearances, but they kind of had an empty batting average in them. So his batting average dipped a little bit, but his OPS plus went up to 140. 80 new plate appearances were found for Neil in that update as well. And then in last year's update, 53 new plate appearances. Did I advance? Here we go. 53 new plate appearances were added. And now he has 142 OPS plus. He's batting over 300 now. But, you know, these are small game totals here for Robinson. Like, we've got a season with 3, 18, 14. We only have, from 1938 to 48, there's only 31% of the Memphis Red Sox box scores in the database right now. So that's like nearly 70% of his career is missing. He was an everyday player with the team. We just don't have the box scores. And as you can see here, too, with Robinson's stats, these are all from like age 30 and beyond. So I can just imagine what he was like in his prime, too. So what's next? More box scores. You know, I was going to say here, go to Memphis, find box scores. But just last night, Scott Williamson was telling me, I've tried that. There's not many there, unfortunately. So hopefully there's other places that we can dig up box scores in Memphis and other places as well. Another thing that is possibly, you know, something that could be done is reevaluating what to classify as major. Could we expand earlier or later, or, you know, include some of those independent teams in between? And then on Baseball Reference itself, expansion and improvement of the data, getting that game level data on the site so we can run these stat head searches for, you know, players who hit for the cycle in, you know, night games or something like that. It would just be amazing to be able to do that. Park factors and strength of schedule are things that could be a part of that as well. How to get involved. The box, there are box scores out there. I don't know how many box scores are out there, but they're out there and they're being found. Donations always help too. Organizations like Sabre, the Negro Leagues Museum, RetroSheet, they are doing incredible work to preserve this legacy and keep it alive. Family foundations are doing the same, sharing the stories and educating the public. We've worked with the Josh Gibson Foundation and the Buck Leonard Association. There's many others, I'm sure, as well. So our goal in this launch was not to rewrite the statistical history of the game, but instead to properly reflect the statistical history of the game. The Negro Leagues are major leagues, but they were different, and those differences need to be recognized and celebrated. In adding these statistics, we didn't want to erase the history of why they were separate in the first place as well. We hope that we did that. Did we do it perfectly? I'm sure we did not, but we're always listening and willing to improve because this is an investment that we're making long term. We take our role in presenting this data very seriously, and we'll continue to do so. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Yes.
Okay, first off, I want to thank you for the unbelievably tremendous job you're doing on restoring this forgotten history. I must admit, it's absolutely incredible to me. I have to admit, there's something slightly Orwellian about it, in that it just shows that who controls the present controls the past. But my question actually is about, what are you doing about unusual feats? For example, one of my favorite baseball trivia questions was always, a team comes to bat, doesn't get any hits, but its batting average doesn't go down. What has happened? The answer used to be Bob Feller's pitched a no-hitter on opening day in 1940 at Comiskey Park. Now the answer is also Leon Day has pitched a no-hitter on opening day in 1946 at Rupert Stadium for the Newark Eagles. Are you guys working on, feats like that, which are, I think, of considerable interest?
Right. Getting the game level data on the site is going to open up so many more things. Because right now, like on our no hitters and perfect games pages on the website, we have Negro Leagues data is not included because we don't have the game level data. But we'll be able to include that as soon as we add the game level data, and all those pages will have all of those amazing feats as well.
Okay. Thank you very much, Lee.
Thank you.
Hi, Alan Cohen. I've looked at a few of these box scores myself. I'm interested in how you came up with earned run averages, since earned runs were not routinely shown in box scores.
Probably more of a question for Kevin and the Seamheads group, but they have their ways of deducing box scores to determine which runs were earned and which were not. I can't say that I'm an expert on that, though.
And just a quick follow-up on Josh Gibson. I guess we were all surprised the first time we looked out on Seamheads or whatever site and saw, well, the last time I looked out at Seamheads, Gibson had 240 home runs as opposed to the 800. I did a little independent research and I'm up to about 375. But I haven't done through the 1930s yet fully. So we'll take a look at that. And I applaud anybody who's done research. And if anybody could ever track down the backup stuff for the Howe News Bureau and how they came up with their statistics, that would probably be one of the great finds of the Negro League research. Right now, as you're saying, those statistics do not have support from actual data that went into them. And I'll stop at that.
All right, thank you.
Hi, Adam. I'm sorry, first of all, that my question is not about Heavy Johnson. But And you may have mentioned this while I was outside briefly, but when a team like the Crawfords or the Grays would take a season or two and go independent, were those box scores in the games where they played against regular league teams, which would be considered exhibitions for league play, were those reported in newspapers similarly to when they were actually part of the Negroland National League, or were those considered outside of the scope of those reporters' general reporting?
Right, yeah. My understanding is that, like, the coverage for the teams that did choose to do that, which were typically the really great teams, like the Monarchs and Crawfords and whatnot, the box scores are out there. Those do appear on the Seamhead site now. So those, what we'll be able to do when we do have the game level data is determine which games to, so right now, if you look at Josh Gibson's stats, they include not only his games against the fellow teams in the league, but also interleague games, and also the games against the top teams that were independent in the Seamhead's database. So right now we don't really have a way of like saying, well, which ones were just in the division or in the league, and which ones were interleague, but we will be able to do that in the future. Now, in terms of the question about like how the coverage was, some of those seasons have great coverage on the Seamhead site. Some of them have lesser, and I'm not sure, like some of those New York Cuban seasons when they were independent. It just seems like the Cubans played less games than the other teams. I haven't figured out why. Maybe I'll ask Adrian about that and figure that out.
Thanks, Ben.
First of all, I want to thank you for my favorite website, baseballreference.com.
Thank you.
Now, you put up the slide that actually, the two slides that frustrate me probably the most about the website, which is the season averages and the ERA leaders for the single season. Because what you're doing is you're mixing into what I see as completely different databases because of the paucity of innings pitched and at-bats. You end up with there's 29 more 400 hitters now in the database, six or seven of which came after Ted Williams. And I think most baseball fans would say Ted Williams was the last 400 hitter, but that's, according to your database, no longer true. There's now Lyman Bostock and Vargas and a number of others. So I just want you to comment on, I just want to comment that I think it's kind of a little bit of a distortion on baseball history that's for the single season leaders. And I was wondering if Baseball Reference could consider an accommodation so that people with 28 innings pitched don't become the all-time ERA single season leader.
Yeah, we've decided that we are going to show the best that we can, the data that we have. If people want to make their own judgments and skip over a player that has 28 innings pitched, they're free to do that. We don't want to do that as the default. We want to make sure that we show every player in our database at the best possible data quality that we have. You know, the real solution is just to find more box scores, and we hope to do that in the future. But, that's why we present the ERA leaderboards and the batting average leaderboards along with the plate appearances and the innings pitched as well. So, you know, you, the reader, can make that determination yourself as well. And, you know, just to touch on, thank you, just to touch on the last 400 hitter as well, you know, it's worth noting that R.D. Wilson is the last 400 hitter, and he appears on our site. I forget exactly what his batting average was, but this is a good example of, people could write that off and say, oh, it was only in a certain number of games. Well, there does exist the end of season data for the 1948 Negro National League and Negro American League that shows he actually did hit .402 over the full season in 76 games. We just don't know what games those were. We don't have all of the box scores in the Seamhead's database, but we do know that over an entire season, R.D. Wilson did hit .402, so he is the last 400 hitter.
Can you address the somewhat bizarre announcement by MLB? But I think I'm getting this right. You guys are out. Retro Sheet is in. I thought all you guys were buddies, and I'm really confused about where I should get my Negro League stats from.
Thank you.
That's probably above Adam's pay grade to answer that question. I look forward to Major League Baseball joining us and presenting this data on their website, and I hope they'll do so with as much haste as they possibly can, because these players deserve to be recognized in that way, and so I hope they'll prioritize making that happen.
But what is RetroSheet doing that you're not doing?
RetroSheet's a great organization. I'm not going to talk about anything that RetroSheet's doing. I hope that they bring a lot more data to light as well. And, you know, we obviously work with them on a lot of other stuff as well.
So. Okay. Thank you.
On the question earlier, I mean, I don't think I've answered all the emails on the site for like 15 years. I have not gotten one complaint about 1800s players showing up on the leaderboards, many of whom have less than 162 games. So I'll just say, you know, if we really wanted to do it right, we'd show Bob Gibson as the all-time leader for a single season ERA, because I think he's the first one in a non-segregated league that shows up on that list.
Right,
I think so.
I mean, all those Ross Barnes fans out there, 29 games in some of those big seasons, so. Yes.
Yeah, first of all, I want to thank you for putting Bullitt Rogan's statistics up there very prominently. I frankly think that that's the better point of comparison with Shohei Ohtani than Babe Ruth. And, you know, while we're at it, John Ward's not a bad comparison as well. But that aside, I have a question about how the releases of new information are scheduled. Are you doing like an annual dump, or are you just sort of putting things in as they get updated and then summarizing them at the end of the year? How do you know when the data have been updated, and are they on some kind of a schedule? And the other question I have is, do we, you know, the box score question, where are the missing box scores? Is really probably weighs on my mind more than anything else, because it's the key to filling in the missing data. Do we have the actual schedules of all of the Negro League teams, yes, so that we could actually know which games they played and where, even if we don't have box scores?
Great questions. First of all, I love Bullitt Rogan. Thank you for pointing him out. Second of all, we do have results and. Somebody will have to correct me later if I'm speaking out of turn, but I believe we have the schedules relatively completely. And when we get the box score data on the site, that's when we'll be able to know, okay, which games exactly are we missing, which then that will allow the community to be like, oh, this game is missing, I'm going to specifically look for this game. I know that giving you the charge to go find box scores when I can't really tell you what ones, that's not particularly helpful yet, so we're going to hope to improve on that and give people, you know, a little bit better direction on what exactly is missing. You know, the best I have right now is, great place to start is Memphis, because they're missing like 70% of the 1940s.
Well, if we knew which teams Memphis played, maybe there was coverage in the opponent's newspaper.
Right, which may be where a lot of the Memphis games are coming from already, is from the away. I'm just speculating there, though.
Yeah. And the update schedule?
What's that?
And the update schedule for...
So far we've been doing a large annual update, and we write a blog post about the changes that happened. Maybe in the future that could happen more frequently. I don't know exactly how often Seamheads updates their own database, but their own website based on their database. But we've been doing an annual update just to kind of do it all at once. And so that, you know, we're not changing leaderboards every single day.
Thank you.
Yep. Thank you.
I need to preface this just a little bit. You'll see why I'm asking what I'm asking. Okay.
Do you mind speaking to the mic a little bit better? I can't quite hear.
Yeah, sure. I'm a creator of player cards for baseball tabletop simulation games. And others in this field who do this have created some Negro League players with the same rules, but the trouble is the database they're working for is a little bit fuzzy, and one guy completely changes players from one release to another. But that means that there is gameplay between white major leaguers of the segregation era and stars of the Negro League era 20 to 48. So I'm interested in whether or not anybody is doing anything about getting box scores and compiling box scores. You must be doing something, because I saw your slide for Josh Gibson. Okay, is on Seamheads or Baseball Reference, is there any way to get at that action, the results of that action?
of the Negro Leagues teams against the AL
Negro
and
League
NL
teams? Teams against independent teams, Negro League teams against each other, where they're not in the same league, you know, interleague play, if you will, and Negro League teams in which they played a Major League All-Star team or played the Phillies or the Athletics in the 20s.
Right. So we're hoping to address part of that with adding the game level data, so you can literally just look at a player's game log and see who they were playing against. In terms of like the games that the Negro League teams played against Major League AL-NL teams or like All-Star teams of AL and NL and minor league teams, I don't know if those box scores will ever be published because that's not something we would present because it's not major league data. So I can't really say anything to that, but in the future, adding the game level data should help do any type of analysis of like who's playing who and how good were they against each other.
Okay, but just before I walk away, there's a guy, he calls himself D.R. Cox. It turns out it doesn't mean doctor. He's D. Randy something or other. Cox at Clemson University did a lot of work in the 80s and 90s looking into Negro Leagues playing against major leaguers and, you know, Major League All-Star teams and so on and so forth, enough to create the team, the charts he made, so he's got to have something to start with.
Thank you.
Yeah, Adam, you didn't mention it, but there's a companion site to Baseball Reference, which is the Sabre Baseball Reference Encyclopedia. And there was we also did a major effort on that site to integrate all of these new major leaguers. About maybe 600 already had a page, all the better known ones. So now every single major leaguer also has a page on the encyclopedia. Some are blank pages because we know hardly anything about them except their last name. But many of them have a lot of information, and of course everybody's is invited if they want to contribute the information that they have found. We've also created pages for every single team season, just like we have for every major league team. Has a, in like 1942 Kansas City Monarchs have a page. Just like the 1942 New York Yankees have a page, which will list the manager, team record, ballpark, all of the basic information. And we've also added the, you know, every other thing so that they're all treated on that site exactly as other major leaguers. So, and thanks to all the work you did with on the Baseball Reference site, we were able to integrate all of this together. So just wanted to mention that.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that.
Okay, I just want to say first, quick comment. I think it would be great if you could somehow open up a discussion on the site. I know it's not the kind of thing the site usually does, of the whole leaderboard question, because I do think there are a lot of issues that could be explored widely, and that would be a good thing. However, the question I want to ask you is much more specific, but it's something that's always fascinated me. The film, The Bingo Long All-Stars and Traveling Motorcade, begins with what appears to be a totally authentic newsreel from sometime in the late 30s or early 40s about a Negro League World Series. And it shows you various players. And at one point, it identifies Josh Gibson as the only man who has ever hit a fair ball out of Yankee Stadium. And my question is, has your team or anybody else in this room or anybody we know of ever tried to authenticate that extremely provocative and significant claim?
That is not something that we have attempted yet because, again, the game level data will help us look into something like that, but I'll open it up to the room for anyone to follow up with you as well.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you for the presentation. I was interested when you talked about which leagues are being counted from that period from 20 to 48. And whether that'll be changed over time kind of thing, and what exactly is being looked at. You know, when folks say, well, you know, the Pacific Coast League quality in the 20s was better than the Federal League, therefore it should be a major league, it's like, well, it wasn't a major league then, Federal League was. That, I presume, is not what's on offer. It has to do, I assume, with the quality of the various leagues, and to what extent, if that's true, to what extent you're looking at, well, Frog Reedus played in this league, but he hit 350 there and he hit 290. You know, what kind of things folks are doing to see how comparable the leagues were to the best of the leagues to be qualified as major leagues?
Yeah, it's a great question. I haven't been involved in any decision making around league designations at all, but one thing I will mention is that, like, like the 1969 decision, for example, like all the things they were looking for in a league was all based on like what the white leagues had. You know, they were looking for that consistency across the league. So I think that any part of this process needs to start with that, recognizing that the Negro Leagues were just different. And that doesn't mean they were, you know, lesser or anything. It means they were different. And that means that the definition of a major league needs to be expanded or modified.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Not sure if this is a question for Baseball Reference or for possibly the Sabre Biographical Committee, Bill Carl, but is there a different information flow on biographical data for the American and National League versus the new Negro Major League teams in terms of changes to biographical data? Well, the information flow has always come from the biographical committee to both RetroSheet and Baseball Reference from Bill's newsletters, but I'm not sure how it's supposed to work with, because there's still a lot of holes in the data for biographical data for the 2,400 new major leaguers that you're now tracking. And so is that coming through Seamheads, or is that coming through Sabre or Chadwick, or where's it coming from?
My understanding is that it's coming through Seamheads. Yes, yeah, that's all coming through Seamheads, but as more information is added, you know, when it's on Baseball Reference, a lot of people are writing in with more information that they have about biographical information for players. And anything that's related to the Negro Leagues players will pass on to the Seamheads database as well. So that way it trickles down to whoever is using that database as well.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Quick comment on Josh Gibson and Yankee Stadium. A lot of people have chased that story around. He had 7 homers in Yankee Stadium, and none of them went out of the park. His longest one in 1930 was well over 400 feet, and a couple of the sports writers described it as being out of the park, but it was only out of the park in the sense it was out of fair territory. He did do a hell of a job at Yankee Stadium, though, even though he didn't hit it out.
Yeah, I can't wait to start being able to look at things by ballpark as well. It's just gonna, you know, we'll learn so much more about the players.
I just wanted to mention on Josh Gibson that the home run was on September 27th, 1930, second game of doubleheader. Quoted in the various papers, the longest homer hit at Yankee Stadium by anyone black or white this year. As best we've been able to determine through various accounts, the contemporary accounts were not that great. The ball went very deep and either hit towards the back of the bleachers in deep left center field, where nobody had ever hit a home run before, and might have gone over the back fence or into the bullpen. We don't know. That is an unfortunate thing. And maybe the game was a bit overshadowed by the fact that Babe Ruth pitched at Braves Field the next day for the Yankees. Don't know about that.
Right.
But research keeps going on.
Yes?
Just wanted to, so not to overshadow the Josh Gibson stuff, which is great to hear about. And but so I wanted to ask something about kind of the stats, insofar as a lot of the stuff that's on Baseball Reference and just kind of by the nature of the field is what I would call, the math term for it is like point estimates or not very reflective of uncertainty. And so given the questions that you've been asked today and some of the other concerns about completeness of data or demonstrating completeness of data, are there any plans for Baseball Reference or Seamheads to display in some fashion, you know, uncertainty distributions, things like that, to more completely demonstrate the uncertainty that we have simply from the metric development versus the incompleteness of the data, and maybe demonstrate that historical forcible removal of information due to racism and, you know, systemic effects.
Yeah, showing uncertainty in box scores is something that I think will, it's not something that we've really had to do much of before, but like, let's say that there's a game account that, you know, it says that there were five runs and the newspaper mentions who knocked in four of them. Like, how do we show who has the fifth one? There's probably more of a question for how that's determined from the Seamheads level. I'll have to learn a little bit more about how we do that. But there might be situations where we have to show, you know, where some of these, you know, decisions were made and show, you know, error bars, uncertainty levels of certain things that happen in a game, because we don't have specific play-by-play all the way down. So probably not a great answer, but it's something that we will definitely have to learn how to show correctly on the website.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
This is just a comment. We had some about the Josh Gibson home run. Frank Howard hit a ball onto the left field roof of Yankee Stadium, and the umpire called it foul. His teammates swore that it was fair, but of course he never got credit for it. And also, of course, foul poles never extended up above the roof, so it made it harder to make a call on something like that.
Yeah, I wonder about some of those home runs that get lost to history because, you know, they were called foul, or, you know, the ones that were in games that were rained out and things like that. That seems like a whole research topic that's probably been done by the people in this room. Who am I kidding? But, yeah, that's... I get it. Thank you so much, everyone. I really appreciate you two checking this out and asking some great questions. Thank you.